pandemic, flu season is upon us, and we've touched on those for the last couple times. But another thing that we hear a lot about is pain, because pain is awful. Nobody wants to be in pain. But we're always looking for the next best thing. And, you know, unfortunately, we're in a spot now where, you know, pain is a very natural response in the body. But depending on the pain you have and how significant it may be, unfortunately, now we're at a spot where there might be some stigma involved with that, you know, and that's an unfortunate thing.
Well, I think we're talking about opioids, right?
Yeah, opioids in particular for that part. But, you know, we'll definitely get to that. And those are primarily used for people that have, well, not primarily, I should say, but they use it for acute and chronic pain. But a lot of it is when we get into an area of chronic pain, opioids are certainly a treatment option. But in a lot of respects, in the medical profession and the healthcare profession as a whole, we've, you know, shot ourselves in the foot, so to speak, with some of that. And chronic pain is one of the most common reasons that adults seek medical care. And it's been linked to restrictions in mobility and daily activity, dependence on opioids, anxiety and depression, poor perceived health, and reduced quality of life. I mean, it really, really affects a lot of different stuff. And we've tried to study it pretty regularly to find out what's the best way to tackle this issue. And a study from the National Health Interview did a survey back in, this is data from 2016, and this is up on the CDC website. And they did a survey to adults and found that approximately 20% of U.S. adults had chronic pain and 8% had a high-impact chronic pain. And that means it's a pain that limits at least one major life activity.
That even sounds low to me.
It very well may be. This was a survey, so in the data, actually, one of the restrictions of the survey is, you know, not, you know, they send these out, not everybody answers these.
Sure.
So this is what the response was that they got. So you're very correct. It's likely that this is even higher number than what was reported in the findings. There's a higher prevalence of chronic pain and that high impact pain. They found it observed in women, older adults, adults that were previously but not currently employed, and then adults living in poverty and adults with public health insurance and in rural residents. Those were the standouts there. Higher prevalence was found with advancing age, and they looked at, it was, the pain was significantly lower among adults with bachelor's degrees or higher compared to all other education levels. So they looked at, you know, to what amount do you understand certain things and how does that associate how you deal with pain. It doesn't really discriminate too much. Non-Hispanic white adults had a significantly higher age-adjusted prevalence to other groups, but no significant difference in high-impact chronic pain were found. So for the most part, if you're really, really hurting, it does not pick and choose what the target is. So there's a lot of data points that came out of this study that were pretty significant, or at least gave us an understanding of what we need to do to look at tackling the issue of chronic pain. And as you mentioned before, we thought we had a solution in the 90s, and that's an area where we tried and failed, and that brings up the opioid crisis. And in the late 90s, pharmaceutical companies were reassuring the medical community that patients would not become addicted to these prescription opioid pain relievers, and healthcare providers began to prescribe them at greater rates. And I don't have the number in front of me now, but there's a staggering number where, oh boy, at least every American has a more than needed supply of opioids. If we were to distribute them all evenly about what's been prescribed to who, we'd all get a healthy amount.
Well, I was just telling you, I just had some surgery recently, and they gave me five, I won't say what it was, but they gave me five tablets for pain. And in the past, you would have got a whole...
You might have got a 90-day supply.
Oh, at least.
Absolutely, just unnecessary for an acute pain situation like you had after a surgery.
You would have had a whole medicine bottle full.
Absolutely. And you don't need those. So that leads to drug diversion.
I mean, they counted them out.
Yeah, that leads to diversion. That leads to overprescribing. That leads to inappropriate use, and that's where we got to where we are. In 2017, more than 47,000 Americans died as a result of opioid overdose, and that number has changed. It's plateauing a little bit. We've really made a lot of steps to get better at this, but it's something that we still really see a lot of, and that includes prescription opioids, heroin, illicitly manufactured fentanyl, which is a very, very powerful synthetic opioid.
But the addicts, they just move from one to another, right?
They jump. I mean, and addiction is truly, that is getting into a road of, I know I don't want to have this, but my body is telling me that it needs this. And that is, addiction itself is another thing that we are really opening the can for studies.
Yes, this opioid crisis was really... I guess you could lay a lot of blame around on that, and certainly the overprescribing was a big part of that.
Right. It was. It was an overprescribing, but it was also in a lot of respects. So, yeah, one, we had some people come out and tell us, I promise this won't happen, and it did. We also had, we were kind of treating pain in a way that you would kind of take a blood pressure, something that you just really needed to address at a certain point in time. The other part that's challenging about it is, depending from person to person, pain is a very subjective thing versus objective. If I take your blood pressure and I see that number, I have a very good understanding of what I might need to do in order to take care of you. But when I'm asking somebody pain, rate your pain from a scale of 1 to 10, how you perceive pain and what that number might be and how I perceive it, those could be incredibly different. And how we would give you a medicine to help take care of that, what might be good for you might not necessarily be good for me, but we tried to take a blanket approach to how we treat pain, and we found that that's just not the case. So it's been really interesting. So the thing that we've stepped back and we've looked at, okay, we've addressed opioids, we're limiting the quantities, we're taking a look at how we prescribe those types of drugs, but when they're not appropriate, what else can we do?
Right.
And enter what they call the complementary health market. And this is where you start seeing a lot of those homeopathic remedies. And I just saw the other day on Netflix, there's a documentary out there that's called Unwell, and it takes a dive into some of the homeopathic and more natural quote-unquote remedies that are out there, and that's become a multi-billion dollar industry. And so now we're looking, is that really doing what it says it does? And that was an interesting take. So I'd encourage you, if you're Netflix junkies out there, take a look at that one. It was really interesting. There's a growing body of evidence that suggests that some complementary approaches to managing pain might help. A couple of them are acupuncture. And compared to some other studies that are out there, acupuncture actually had some evidence to suggest that technique could actually reduce the need for opioids. But that was the only one out of these other ones I'm going to talk about. Hypnosis, which I thought was an interesting one, that showed it was moderately effective in managing chronic pain. But the effectiveness of that treatment, that's extremely variable. There's a lot of skepticism still based around that, but it is being looked at. Massage, that's been a tried and true, depending on what type of pain you have and where. If it's musculoskeletal, that can really help. Mindfulness and meditation. There was a review of studies in 2017 that showed just meditating and just being mindful of chronic pain, it was associated with small improvements in pain symptoms. So there may be something there. I mean, aside from pain, mindfulness and meditation, psychology is coming out more and more showing that there's a lot of benefits to that if we all just kind of take a couple of minutes through the day and just breathe and think about living in that moment. Spinal manipulation is another one. Tai Chi, yoga, those types of activities. So there's a lot of things that are being tried because we're looking for an answer besides the pill. What can I do without just taking a medicine? So what does the science say about those types of approaches? I always say, with any treatment, it's really important to talk to your doctors about what their thoughts are on kind of looking at doing a study like that. Ask them about what they recommend. Make sure they're on board. Understand what you're looking at, what you'd like to do. People with certain medical conditions, they may need to modify or avoid some of those practices in order to not cause injury to another thing that might be going on. It's important to remember that for practitioners and teachers of these types of practices, make sure they're properly qualified. Check out their certifications. You want to go to someone who really knows what they're doing and wants what's in your best interest.
This is all buyer beware, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. There is not a sticker, slap for any of these types of treatments yet. They're very new.
Housekeeping good seal.
Yeah, exactly. Approval. We're paying attention to them and we're learning more about them, but a lot of these are still very experimental. And I think, as a community that's trying to be aware about their health, it's important to remember that these are not tried and true methods. The best way to do that is study it in depth with the appropriate parameters. That takes time and resources, and it's harder to come by immediately. But when it comes to pain, people want to fix it now because, hey, this hurts. I'm not happy. I'm not comfortable. I need something to help me. That's part of the big equation and the big project. And with the pharmacy, we're also there to help you answer questions about anything that you might have that comes down or want to bounce an idea off of us, and we can try to point you in the right direction.
Well, I like the natural doesn't always mean safe.
No, it does not. It does not. Some natural products that they're, the way that they're marketed that way, a lot of them are those dietary supplements and things like that. Those actually might have side effects and may interact with other prescription medications. So when you're looking at taking an herbal supplement or some kind of a homeopathic remedy and you're on other prescriptions, I always recommend speaking with a pharmacist before you dive into those so they can check that with your other medications and see if there's any side effects that might come from that. The FDA has warned the public about that in the past because they did find that there were companies that were making dietary supplements that were... One example, they were promoting it for arthritis pain, and they were actually laced with prescription drugs, and they were selling it as a dietary supplement, and that's just not going to fly.
Yeah.
So.
Just a quick word on flu shots. We had the Jackson County Health Officer on with us, and Dr. Khaldun was actually on earlier. I guess both agreeing that late September, early October would be the best time.
I agree with them. Yep, I would agree with that. And that's, as I've stated before, just to make sure you get that best coverage. That flu shot's good for about 6 months. And we really want to make sure, sometimes that flu rears its head mid-March, up until mid-March. So mid-September to early October, that's going to give you the best coverage for that peak flu season when we think that it's going to really cause the most issue. We do have flu shots at the pharmacy. We're excited to be able to participate in a lot of clinics in the Jackson community. So if you have questions about that, feel free to come on in. Ask if you can schedule an appointment, and we'd be happy to take care of you as best we can. But
are you doing flu shots already?
We are, yep. Okay. And we are still sticking by that recommendation of, mid-September to late October. However, if you do come in and there's circumstances you'd like it now, we certainly won't turn you away. But it is still our recommendation. If you can hold out for a week or two longer, you'll get the best bang for your buck. But I certainly won't refuse to take care of you.
If you have a question, call Browns.
517-750-2180.